You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, well, troll on in.
Yeah, troll on in and get some. And by the way, today it's garbage. You troll on in, garbage out. It's our pleasure once again to be speaking with Dr. Paul Dalzell. Dr. Dalzell is the senior scientist with the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. And that would suggest, Paul, that science needs data, and that today we're going to talk about there's good data and there's some not so good data.
Yeah, I mean, over the years we've been asked to be increasingly more stringent in our management of fish stocks, federally managed fish stocks, and you know, we have to figure out how much fish is in the sea, how much fish we can take out, and what is the current status of the fish that we're fishing on. And we can only do that for a very few fish, you know, bottom fish, for example, some of the pelagics, but the vast majority of fish are what we call data poor.
Yeah, and you know, that's what we're going to try to isolate and key on that today. I was surprised to find out that there's actually a category called data poor stocks, which is simply like it's anybody's guess what's really out there, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah. At best, you might just have some catch data.
Mm-hmm.
For the coral reef fish, we're actually a bit lucky. We've got biomass data. There's someone's gone down there and counted the number of fish. They can translate that into pounds of fish. And, excuse me, we can do some calculations which can give you an MSY, or at least an annual catch limit, and some sense of what's the probability of overfishing the stock. But still, it's still a big guess.
Well, you know, the thing is that I what I was hoping we could address today is, who's the beneficiary of good common data? In other words, right now I do know that we've had, you mentioned earlier the deep seven, the bottom fish. We had the survey done, and it was sort of a guessing what was out there, and it was going to impact the stocks. And this year, there's actually been a decrease in the catch limits because it's been documented that it looks like the fishery is being strained. But you say that there's some fish we really don't have any idea.
Yeah. I mean, we don't really have much idea about the scale of the stock, say, of small pelagics like Opelu and Akule. We do have some ideas about some of the reef fish in terms of the biomass from surveys conducted by the National Marine Fisheries Service.
What about, though, Dr. Dalzell, when one fish has more than one hat? In other words, you mentioned pelagics and small pelagics like Opelu and Akule, which occur in deep water just as they do in shallow water. But they're also a lot in shallow water. So a lot of people think, well, Akule is a reef fish.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's classed in with reef fish landings. Mm-hmm. It's probably one of the biggest of the reef fish caught here in Hawaii, and certainly in places like American Samoa and Guam, it's periodically a very important reef fish, although it's really a small pelagic fish.
Interesting that you can have a fish that tiny, that far out in the ocean, that can even survive.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, hey, you know, we think of our catches here in terms of being big, but you should go to the Philippines where they catch 50,000 metric tons of Akule.
Yeah, yeah.
And 100,000 or 150,000 metric tons of Opelu.
At what point in time does that get scary? I mean, you know, like you mentioned that earlier. I know that it used to be measured many years ago. I was part of a small Akule operation. We had an airplane that we surrounded fish for. And, you know, if we caught 2,000 or 3,000 pounds, it was like, whoa, home run. But it was just the tip of the iceberg as to what was out there.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to basically, it's fine what you're catching if relative to the total stock, it's small. I believe we're doing a project right now where we're matching aerial surveys of the Akule around Oahu with the actual catches. And it'll be interesting to see if the catches are just a small fraction or a large fraction.
Do you expect or sense that we might have a lot more of those out there than we think?
My guess would be yes. You know, it's a very resilient fish. I know of schools of Akule that have been fished for something like 50 years in Papua New Guinea. I once tracked down a nun who actually used to go out every week with a big seine net and catch a coulee off a wharf in Papua New Guinea. And it was interesting because she related that in the 50s, the stock just disappeared for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Now, the same thing happened here in Hawaii. You know the name Leo Ohai.
Leo Ohai, of course, a very famous Akule and Opelo guy. Yeah.
He told me that in the mid-50s, the Akule just seemed to disappear. And I think that's one of the things, just nature takes its course. It's not a case of overfishing. It's a case of things change in the environment. The stocks decline. And then they come back.
You know, one thing that I thought was extremely interesting about Leo Ohai years and years ago, he used to tell everybody about the schools of Ulua, and everybody dissed him like that didn't happen. Mm. And then one day he showed somebody that there was literally 20 or 30,000 pounds of Ulua in a school. So but he was certainly the master. And when you mentioned the same school, he had an annual trek, I think he did to Kauai. Mm. And off Hanalei, they had this huge catch. They used to give everybody, you know, buckets full of fish, but they could rely on that being there. But they sort of knew when to do and when to not.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, I once interviewed Leo with a colleague, and it's like he can remember every single fish he caught.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
Great.
What a statistician. That gets us back to the point where a lot of that was, I guess, almost like passed down from generation to generation as a chant of what fish are there and what fish are not. How many would you say, how many different species would be into this category of data poor stock?
Well, you know, there's about 700 reef fish in Hawaii, several hundred.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them
you're talking about ornamentals and all mixed up.
Yeah. Most of them would be data poor. If you go to Guam, it's about 2,000.
Mm-hmm. Wow!
So it's a big, big, big category.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we have an ace in our back pocket for some species, which is the fact that we have this biomass data. So we have biomass and we have catch, and we can do some fairly sophisticated modeling with that. My colleague, which I think you've interviewed on this show, Malloy Sabata.
Yeah, he's unbelievable what can be done with the limited resources that
are and he's him and colleagues from the mainland have done some and also here in Hawaii have done some amazing work, you know, using these sort of small data streams.
What it must be the big challenge, and I think we talked about this briefly off the air, was how in the world do you incorporate management of something where you don't really, it's management in the dark?
Well, at the end of the day, you do also have the option of expert opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you turn to the Leo Ohais of this world or other, you know, great fishermen. I think you've interviewed Roy Morioka.
A lot of these guys, Ed Ebisui in the deep center, a lot of these guys are willing to share their information. And I think that I've seen at the Fishers Forum more and more people coming forward and saying, okay, we realize that it's not them and us, that we all have to sort of determine this together. But isn't it sort of amazing that the information that you're talking about is what's going to establish more accurate ability to either regulate or deregulate catch limits?
Yeah, the great thing is that you do have the ability to call on expert opinion. If you're really stymied, that you do have no data at all, you can call expert opinion and maybe get a... You know, you wouldn't rely just on one. You would have to rely on several and try and get some kind of consensus about what is happening with the stock, what might be the correct level of catch at this time. Even with data, it's still a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
what's the data, you know?
Yeah. I mean, in Hawaii, we're lucky because we have the commercial marine license, and there's quite an effort goes into following up on people that don't report.
Mm-hmm. Thank goodness, thank goodness technology is intercapped in that, because a lot of people now are more likely to give out accurate reports because it's easier.
Yeah, they can do it online.
Yeah.
In the territories like American Samoa, Guam, and the Northern Marianas, it's still a lot of it is done by Creel surveys.
Mm-hmm. And then on the spot when he's Creel. I don't know if we have any Creels in Hawaii.
You do for recreational fishing.
Of course,
The HMERFs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there you've got to say, well, here's my sample, here's the sampling universe, I'm going to expand the sample to the sample universe, and that's where you really get into the the problems.
How would you advise people that have the ability to share their knowledge of their data to do so? I mean, I don't know. Every now and again, somebody must come forth out of nowhere and say, "Hey, this might be of helpful. I've seen this. Or I've watched this."
I would always encourage sharing because. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's the fisherman who's going to get regulated.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have knowledge which gainsays or is not in line with some scientific analysis.
I remember once we were talking about the yellowfin tuna. Mm. And they were going to be doing this to determine limits, catch limits, ACLs, even recreationally. That if you're darned if you do, darned if you don't. If you told them you catch 10 a year... and you catch 30 a year, they're going to give you a 10 a year to catch. Yeah. And they, you don't want to tell them there's 30 a year because you don't want them to cut that 30 down. So it's at the end of the day, aren't most of us just kind of selfish? We're more worried about ourselves as individuals than the big picture.
Of course. I mean, you could get into some complex social and economic theory about the prime motivation for any human's action is selfishness and looking after number one. But I think there's also this other side of the coin is that there's a willingness to share and to share information. I mean,
there weren't, could we do what we want to do? I don't think so.
No,
we just couldn't get anything done.
No.
I think also maybe we should reflect on something else, and that is that there are certain times that if you are overfishing a certain species, that you have effects in the fishery that are more than just that species. Mm. I mean, for instance, if you catch all the Akuli, and my eat a coolie, and there's all of a sudden nothing for them to eat, where are they going to go?
Yeah, I mean, this is the sort of the ecosystem theory of fishing, that you're not just looking at one fish stock in isolation, but you're looking at it as, you know, taking the coolie. One, it's a targeted stock.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it's part of an ecosystem. It's a small pelagic. So it's eaten by nearshore tunas, wahoo, mahi-mahi, you know, other species of pelagic fish. And so that if you reduce its biomass significantly, that's going to have a knock-on effect.
I remember I had a friend of mine that used to go out every night and catch Opelu and keep them live. Mm. And he was doing it for the fishermen, the wanted to use them for bait.
Mm.
And when there was no Opelu, they would use Akuli.
Mm.
And they said, well, the Akuli didn't work. Well, of course it does. Because aren't there great similarities between the two?
I think the... they're both in the same family of fish, which is the jacks or the Kurangidae. I think Opelu are interesting. They live a lot longer, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And a coolie that lives for 3 years would be an old man.
Is that right?
Yeah, they don't live that long.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually done age and growth of them. What was nice, I did some age and growth in the Philippines, and it matched very nicely the age and growth here in Hawaii.
Which must have been comforting.
Very comforting.
Yeah.
I think Opelu, they live longer, and I think also when they get bigger, they become more a demersal or bottom fish species.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the correct term for them is Opelu mama, is when they get big, they get picked up by bottom fish. I think they have a two-phase life cycle of start off pelagic, and then they become more of a bottom type fish.
You know, until you said something, I never really put much significance on the age of small fish for some reason or other. And I do know that there's been some pretty good data on growth of tuna and growth of, say, jacks like the Ulua.
Mm.
When's their breeding time? When do they pup? And all of this stuff. It seems to me like these Akuli and Opelu are on the planet a lot less time than some of their predators.
Yeah, well, I mean, in another life, my main paycheck came from working on tunas and small pelagic fish.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can go with things like Nehu, for example. Mm-hmm. If they live 6 months, it's a miracle.
Yeah, I would say. And then everybody eats Nehu.
And then there are sprats, which I don't know the Hawaiian term for them. If they live for more than 3 or 4 months, it's a miracle.
Is that right?
Yeah, they have incredible... They're literally like fruit flies. Mm. As you get bigger, sardines, you know, you're looking at maybe a 1 to 2 year lifespan. Mm. The Akule, 3 years. The Pelu, 5, maybe 7 years. And particularly longer if they do become a demersal species. We don't have any small mackerels here like they do in Southeast
Asia.
Yeah,
and you know, it's I'm not sure why we don't, because you would think this fishery would support mackerels. Mm. They are hugely important fish for a lot of things besides eating in other places.
Yes, yeah. And you know, they're a good bait fish species.
Okay, so bottom line here is when people start looking at catch limits, it's this data you're talking about, the data poor stocks. What's being done at the council level, for instance, to call attention to which of these stocks need to be looked at closer?
Well, again, I mentioned my colleague Malloy.
Mm-hmm.
He has developed a model that with colleagues that provides more statistical rigor in developing the catch limits. And then he can evaluate those catch limits against catches.
Okay.
We've also worked, have projects trying to improve the data which is being collected, particularly in the territories where they have to do creel surveys rather than direct reporting as they do in Hawaii. It always comes down to better data is going to give you more accurate results.
You know, I can't tell you the honor that it's been to find out more and more of what this council is doing, and maybe as a scientist you can also remind people exactly how valuable the United Fish Agency auction is when it comes time for data collection, because it's pretty much most of the fish we eat goes through that building, most of the pelagic. So it's a great source.
It's a great the pelagics aren't even the bottom fish, and mm-hmm. they've been collecting data on the catch and also on the size frequencies, because
mm-hmm.
size frequencies again are very important in fishery management, particularly if you find out that fish are getting smaller. Okay, that might be because there's a big recruitment going on, or we can be fishing out the big ones.
You know, in that some of the reporting that you were mentioning in other parts of the council's domain is nowhere near as specific, because it's the catch gets dispersed in a lot of ways and consumed in a lot of ways. Mm. Isn't this valuable information, the data poor stock information, as to counseling people in other parts of the fishery what they can and can't take to, in other words, to sustain themselves? In other words, they better find something besides a coolie to eat every day, because they're going to run out of them.
Yeah, I mean, the best fisheries are ones that, if you can use a technical term, you fish across the trophic levels. You fish. Mm. You don't fish just the predators. You don't fish just the herbivores. You fish across. You know, you take a mix of each, and you try and do it sort of almost. You know, your catch should sort of reflect what's the biomass of those different. The spectrum of biomass of those different species in the water there.
You know, interesting that you say that, Dr. Dalzell, because going back to a conversation we had a long, long time ago, right after we first met, we talked about the absolute criminal act of the number of sharks that were being taken in the Pacific and all over the world, for that matter of fact, and that there's been this great reawakening. I'm not sure that it's reflected in very positive numbers yet, but it would seem to me that the more and more places that have outlawed the take of these sharks and these fins, that the apex predator is returning to its valuable position, or not as threatened as it used to be.
Well, one would hope so, but I think that there are so many countries in which they have very loosely governed fisheries, and that sharks are still a very high commodity. You know, you write about even the Chinese government has done some actions to, like, for example, banning shark fin soup at official functions, but there's still a big demand for shark fin.
Black market,
and there's still a big demand for shark flesh. It's you know, there are some fish, some places where eat a lot of shark. So whilst I would be mildly cautiously optimistic that some shark species can recover, but you know,
we don't want to high five everybody yet, because it's a little premature.
Exactly,
to do that.
And you know, things like oceanic whitetip have been fished to very small percentage of their original numbers.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us today and for pointing out and schooling me on what data poor stocks are. And hopefully next time we can say that there aren't as many of them.
Thanks again for having me here, and I'm always glad to talk about fishery management issues.
Dr. Paul Dalzell, the senior scientist with the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. Okay, that's going to wrap us up for this episode of Go Fish. Our thanks to POP and also to the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council for sponsoring this program. We'll be back again next time. Tight line, sharp hooks, following season, big bites. And if you come up with an idea of something you want to hear on the show, hey, drop me an email. TheMikeBuckShow@AOL.com. TheMikeBuckShow@AOL.com. See you next time. Have a great day fishing.